Hi, and I am the last speaker for our session. My name is Barbara Leal. I'm at West Virginia State University, and I'm going to be presenting research out of my lab, mostly work that came out of the thesis, master's thesis of Hannah Payne, and then both she and Daniel Payne have redone some work that we needed to after her thesis was done. All right. I know West Virginia is not considered a big tomato-growing state, but they love their tomatoes just like everybody else. It's actually our top producer when you look at protected culture, and I'm in particular breeding tomatoes for protected culture, so greenhouse and high tunnel production in there. In West Virginia, which we are almost exclusively small farms, it's got an economic value of $3.7 million in there. So, why are we interested in acyl glucoses or acyl sugars? Acyl sugars actually have been shown to have wonderful resistance to a wide variety of insect pests in there, and they in particular, they're in Solanum pinellii and a few other tomato wild species in there. This is some pictures off of Solanum pinellii LA716, that accession, and it comes out of the trichomes, in particular the type 4 trichomes. In the accession per se, it's mostly glucose esters. Once you make hybrids, you can get sucrose esters in there. The resistance is really good for aphids, whiteflies, leaf miners, beet armyworm, fruit worm. So, wonderful. And if you're growing greenhouse or high tunnel tomatoes, the aphids and whiteflies are of huge interest in there. So when I took up the job that I'm at now, I thought, this is great. I'm just going to move that resistance in. And I thought, all right, this would be a piece of cake. So was ready to go and put it all in, and then I started thinking about it. And in the case of acyl sugars, you don't get just a single compound off of the wild species. You get this whole gamish of different compounds. And they don't really know which one makes differences on the plants in terms of keeping the pests away on there. So I had a master's student who wanted to do a joint project between myself and a chemist in there, and we have a chemistry professor who likes to do retrosynthesis. So we thought it'd be really kind of fun to have a combination. So Hannah went through and has come up with a retrosynthesis method to actually produce acyl glucoses, and she actually synthesized the C4 version, and she used acyl glucose as the base in there. We also had the extracted acyl glucoses off of LA716 as well. But what I was interested in and what stopped me from immediately going and moving this into my lines was, if you're growing growing tomatoes in a greenhouse or high tunnel, you primarily are using some kind of biological control, and beneficial insects are a big one. So we decided that we needed to check out whether or not having these acyl sugars on the plants was going to be a problem, because we couldn't find any literature. So we decided to start with green lacewings. That's a generalist predator in there. So green lacewings, or Chrysoperla rufolabris, is also known as the aphid lion. It's not the pretty adult that does all the good work for you, but it's actually the larvae. They can eat 200 to 400 of the bad insects in their lifetime as a larvae in there. And they're very voracious, so voracious that when you rear them, you have to rear them separately, because otherwise they eat each other. And yes, we've seen that. So when Hannah took the project on, she went in and did a lot of good background research, because we had not worked in this area. And she in particular decided to work based off of the International Organization of Biological Controls plan. So we basically started at the beginning here under the laboratory tests and trying to set up worst case scenarios to decide if our compounds were really harmful or considered harmless and then safe for use in the field, or in our case, greenhouse high tunnels. in there. So we're really looking at worst case scenarios and trying to do the most extreme. We do actually rear our own Ruffalabras so that we have them all developmentally timed in there. If anybody's ever interested, they're super easy to rear. We have been doing it now for about 2.5 years. So our two types of experiments we've run with it, we do a triple exposure assay. We use second INSTAR, and then we also are going to talk about a behavioral assay that we run also on the second INSTAR. You cannot use the first INSTAR. The first INSTAR, the jaw is very delicate, and if you move them, you actually can cause problems, which would then negate any of your results in there. So it's second or third INSTAR to work with. All right, so our triple exposure assay with the second INSTAR, what you do and where the triple part comes from is you're going to actually do contact. They're going to have contact in their environment or contact on them themselves, residual that's in their environment, and ingestion, their food gets actually treated with it. We used actually compounds based on what is suggested would be a acceptable amount to give resistance if it was deployed out in the field. So it's around 60 micrograms per centimeter squared is what we actually applied. So we had a control of water, we had our synthesized compound, the extracted off of the accession, and then we also used malathion in there so that we could have controls in both ways. We sprayed the glass petri dishes in there, then we actually sprayed the larva inside our modified spray cups in there. We also treated their food, which is Hephaestia eggs, assembled it all together, and then we actually took data over the time from development. So we'll go through this. Keep going backwards. All right, so what we did was we monitored for mortality every day, look for developmental times, when they moved to third instar, when they pupated, when they emerged, what the gender was coming out in there. And yes, that's exciting to go and watch, go and look and see who's male and female in there. The results off of our triple exposure assay were pretty much what we expected. Everything treated with malathion died within about the first 15 minutes. So didn't have to track that anymore. The water, one day after treatment, you can see we lost some to the water, some with the extracted, nothing with what was synthesized. And once you get out to 10 days after in there, we're seeing not much differences between any of these, nothing that was statistically significant. That made us pretty excited on there. We also looked at developmental times in there. So the green bar here is looking at from when we sprayed them to the third instar, to pupation, and to actual emergence in there. And between, across the three treatments, there was no statistical differences. We also looked at when they emerged, gender ratios. Nothing was statistically significant there. So again, I know this is the hard one. You always want to see those statistical differences. In our case, we didn't want to see them. So the other treatment or the other assay that we run is a behavioral assay. This was recommended to us when we started off on the project. We hadn't intended to do one. It's turned out to be rather interesting. And this is actually our second version of it because our first one we didn't get a positive and minus control, so doing anything in between didn't matter. So we've got the similar treatments of water, the synthesized and extracted. We've switched to using DEET in there instead of the malathion. And what we've got as a setup is we have a viewpoint tracking system that has a video camera clicked into a computer, and there's software, and it will track, and you'll see this in a second. It'll track how far the bug moves and goes in the arena with it. We've redesigned our arena so that we have to use glass for putting this down, so we don't have anything from the plastic applied with it. So these are actually glass cover slips that get put down in an arena. These are long ones on either side. One gets treated with the compound. One gets treated with control, which in our case we use acetone as our carrier for both. And then in the center we have an untreated small cover slip where we actually release the larva. We found that that's much easier and cleaner to work with. And so here you can see the light box we use, and then the camera is actually up above. And here's one of my students putting it in on there. So we actively track them for 10 minutes, and they record ambulatory time, walking distance, velocity, and then we go through and look at the area spent. The tracking will actually show where the insect goes. So from here's where it started, it'll track all the way through, and I'll show you some tracks, some representative tracks in a minute, and actually it'll change color on how fast they're going in there, so when you look at the track you can see whether they're faster on it. So here's the results of the behavioral. So this was controls on both sides. They were released out of here. You can see they went on both sides. Here they were treated with DEET. The treatments on this side, control that just had the acetone, you see they kind of come to the edge with the DEET and they stayed away. They didn't go there at all on there. So over here, this is the acyl sugar compound in there. This is the complexed one. They actually went on both sides in there. And then here's the other one. And you can see, again, both. So whether it was our synthesized or the complex mixture in there, they went on both sides of it. If we go and look on distance, how many centimeters they run. So this is comparing both sides of a treatment. The only one that had any differences were the ones where this is the control side of the DEET, and there's the DEET-treated side. Everything else was really non-significant in there. So where do we stand? Pretty much with the triple exposure assay, we see this, we had less than 30% mortality, so it's considered harmless by IOBC in there. No statistical differences in there. Sex ratio was fine. If we look at the behavioral, the larvae express repellents if they get in contact with DEET, but they don't seem to express any repellents or irritability due to any of the acyl glucose compounds. So that's where we stand right now. I actually have the chemist is creating other acyl glucoses for us to use, and we're actually investigating a few others, and we're getting ready to hopefully bring ladybugs into the lab to trial those next. So, any questions? Not in the fruits. This is all exuded out of the trichomes. So it's only on plant parts that are going to have trichomes, and it comes out of the type 4s in there. So leaves, stems, sepals, not the petals. The woman I postdoced with who got me on this and who's been breeding with LA716 found that it wasn't on the petals, it doesn't work on thrips. She was very disappointed in there. It also does not work with Colorado potato beetles. That was another disappointment. So, yes, ma'am. Yes, the question is any success in other crops? Yes, Nicotiana, tobacco, they've got acyl sugars, and there's actually somebody who's actively working at Cornell on looking at it in other Solanaceae. There actually was a compound that was released. It's no longer being produced, Sucre Shield, in there, and it's no longer being produced anywhere. It was OMRI approved. We actually have some, so we're actually in the midst of doing trials with that and some other organic pesticides to see how they work on beneficials, because again, we didn't find a lot of literature. So, yes? No. The question is there anything known about acyl sugars on pollinators? No. And I don't know that I want to get into that, but I would sure love to find somebody to work with in there. And our retrosynthesis chemist is kind of crazy, but he's all in for working with anybody on anything. So anyhow, if anyone has any questions, find me later. More than happy to talk about it. Thanks. And thank you for all coming.